five, four, three, two.
Welcome back into the Radcast, everybody. I'm Steven.
I am Mighty Morphin Matt.
Yes, Mighty Morphin Matt for this second week of Mighty Morphin May.
And you are Super Sentai Steven.
That's me. Got it put on my birth certificate and everything this week.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, welcome back in as we continue our trek into the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers. Mm-hmm. Last week, if you listened, thank you very much.
Yes.
You heard us talk about season one. We went into the history of the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers as a whole. Mm-hmm. We talked about some of the overarching elements that played into season one.
Some story arcs, monsters,
elements, all these different things. And we'll deliver more of the same this week.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to dive a little further into some of the turmoil behind the scenes.
Yes.
That led to the departure of three of the original Power Rangers.
Very bittersweet.
Yes, very bittersweet, but we'll get into that. But thank you for listening to last week. If this is your first time here, jumping on to us talking about season two and the season two retrospective,
yeah,
go back and listen to season one.
Season one. It's Mighty Morphin May.
Damn
Mighty
it.
Morphin way.
Start from the way back in the beginning.
Yeah, exactly. Go back to episode number one before you
don't,
listen to this
please
one.
Don't. Just
that's a lot of episodes.
Stay with us here. But thank you for joining us. And before we get into talking about season two, Matt, why don't you let everyone know where they can always find us?
Yes, you can always find us on social media. You can find us on Instagram. We're at the Radcast. Cast spelled with a K. The Radcast is all one word. And then as far as podcast apps go, we're on all of them. Mm-hmm. All the major podcast apps.
Yeah.
And then wherever you can rate and review, make sure to give us 5 stars. Not to boost our ego or anything. Mm-hmm. It's mainly just to help us out. If you want to leave a little review, that would also be helpful.
Yeah.
But yeah. Thank you.
Algorithm stuff.
But thank you for joining us mm-hmm. for week two of Mighty Morphin Man.
Yes. And where we left off with week one, with season one of Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, the show has become an absolute juggernaut in terms of merchandise,
yes.
Phenomenon in mm-hmm. terms of popularity on television.
Yeah.
It leaves it open to criticism from parents groups,
of course.
Which, you know,
doesn't end in season one.
No, the backlash that it caught on with the later end of season one carries into season two, mm-hmm. which leads to some changes in certain things.
Oh yeah.
Those aren't the only changes.
Oh yeah.
But season two kicks off using the Zoo Ranger, or I guess the footage that was original to the American Mighty Morphin Power Rangers. If you listen to week one, you know that we mentioned how after episode 40, which was supposed to be the end of Mighty Morphin Power Rangers as a whole, Saban Entertainment wasn't anticipating how popular the show was, so they contracted out Toei Production Group, the Rainbow. It's in Rainbow Six, but like the Rainbow Production Group, who made all the monsters, to create new footage that they could use. A lot of it tailor made for Mighty Morphin Power Rangers stories.
Yeah.
Season two, they continue that. I think we mentioned how the first like 13 episodes of season one use that footage that was made specifically for the American show. As they got further into season two, and they went to the Gosai.
You said season two, like the first. You said the first 13 episodes of season one. Did you mean season two?
Yeah, if I said season one, I apologize. Yes, season two. They used, you know, the footage they created to help round out the last 20 episodes of season one. They used in the first 13 of season two. So they were going off of that footage. Mm-hmm. They started to use new Sentai footage as far as Zords, far as action, or a lot of the Zord action are establishing shots in a way. They started using footage from the next season after the Zoo Ranger Sentai stuff, the Gosei Dai Ranger yeah. Sentai show.
Yeah.
So they started doing that from episode one. They started using the Zord footage with the Thunder Zords.
Mm-hmm.
But they could still use that connection to season one with the footage for season two. And as season two went on, as they had to rely a little more on this next Sentai show footage, it became a little more kind of separated.
Yeah.
Like it didn't seem as cohesive first season.
There were some details in that new Sentai show
mm-hmm.
that made it kind of difficult
mm-hmm.
to use some of their footage in spots. They relied heavily in this season, especially. This season was a changing of the guard, a rounding uh-huh. of the corner, a beginning of a new era,
mm-hmm.
Obviously with new Rangers, behind-the-scenes stuff, the way that they made the show, with that Sentai footage, but also they incorporated a lot more American footage, which kind of made the aesthetic a little jarring in mm-hmm. certain spots.
Yeah.
It matches up, but at the same time, like it just gives it a different feel.
Yeah. I think they had more of the advantage in season one of being able to rely a lot more on mm-hmm. the Zooranger footage.
Oh yeah.
And I think where I was going with like the whole from season one and season two stuff, the footage that was made for American Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, it's kind of well known with fans as like Zoo 2. So like it's like the Zooranger 2.0 footage or whatever. So I'll establish that if I reference that, I'll just call it the Zoo 2 footage. It was easier in season one, and easier is a loose term.
Right.
It wasn't easy, but it was better in season one. They were able to rely more on the footage that they based the show off of.
Definitely more cost effective.
Yeah, definitely more cost effective as far as aesthetically, like you mentioned.
Yeah.
You could kind of see more consistency throughout the season because, you know, a lot of the footage was the Japanese footage mm-hmm. and any of the insert stuff for America.
Yeah.
You were able to kind of keep some sort of, again, you know, through line, some sort of consistent, you know, storytelling when it comes to that. But, I mean, again, also like we established in the first episode, this is a show for kids.
Exactly.
So a lot of kids,
as long as you give them what they mm-hmm. expect, they're not going to worry about production details or anything like that.
The kids aren't going to notice that. What they're going to notice are the Power Rangers are still there.
Exactly.
And there are also, like you'd said, with the changing of the guard with new Rangers, they'll pick up on the fact that the human characters or out-of-costume characters they like are gone.
Yep.
But to them, it may not be as big a deal if you're maybe like a 7, 8, 9-year-old kid.
Especially with story-wise how they introduce the new Rangers and built to that. It didn't seem random.
Yeah. So with that being said, that means there's three new cast members.
Yep.
So season two ran from July on Fox Kids ran from July 21st, 1994 to May 20th, 1995. So just a few months. Season two ended just a couple months before the movie came out.
Right.
The movie, and we can talk more about this in season three, when we talk about season three, and also we did a review of the movie all the way back 3 years ago.
Yeah,
in 2020,
which I was listening to on the way here, and it's funny that we mention on there we're like in one day because we were given history and stuff, like real brief about the Power Rangers, and it was like you were like in one day we will do something Power Rangers related, whether it's an episode by episode or like a season by season. And I was like, 3 years later.
Yeah, but it's more than I can say for some of the stuff that we're like, in one day we'll do this.
We'll do this. Yeah.
And like we almost never pick back up on it because it always sounds nice in the moment.
Of course.
But then, you know, our mindsets change. Life, you know, gets in the way a bit. Not in a negative way, but it's just one of those things that we just don't pick back up on it.
Yep.
However, I also listened to it and I was like, hey,
yeah.
I also noticed we talked a lot about the stuff we're going to mention today.
Yeah.
And then also
and how it affected the movie.
Yeah. And the stuff we talked about in season one. And I'd say for those of you that maybe just want a more general overview and maybe, and I hate saying this, maybe you don't want to sit through, you know, an hour and handful of minutes listening to us kind of divulge. We go over a very brief background of the Power Rangers and the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, the movie episode. But please stay tuned to these episodes.
Please stay engaged. Please.
Yes. Please.
There were a few bits and bobs in that episode that
I didn't do as much research as I did for this, right, to where I was like, I got that wrong. I got that wrong kind of thing.
But we talked about the movie and that.
And the movie was kind of the turning point. Mm-hmm. I feel like for the show, it was, for me, thinking about it, and granted, I haven't gotten into watching the season three episodes.
Yeah.
It's kind of the beginning of the end.
Yeah. And in a way, not just the release physically of the movie as a turning point for the show, but in building up to the movie, mm-hmm. it was a turning point in the show.
Oh, yeah.
The movie was a huge fixture in how things shifted.
Yeah.
In just pre-production stuff.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. If you want to hear us talk about the movie, mm-hmm. I think we'll re-release that.
Yeah, it is like a bonus, maybe.
Yeah, by the time this drops, there's a chance that we might have already re-released it, or we'll re-release it in a couple of days, just to stay kind of up with, you know, another bit of Mighty Morphin May, a little bonus there, and then also to kind of bridge between seasons two and three when we talk about it. So, the new faces. We get Rocky, Aisha, and Adam coming in, which when you and I really started watching, those were kind of, when we were watching newer episodes, those were like the Rangers.
Yeah.
We would watch the stuff in syndication mm-hmm. with like Jason, Trini, and Zach.
Yeah.
But we were more familiar with Rocky, Adam, and Aisha.
Yeah.
So they were, I'm not going to say they were our Rangers, but they were the ones that were black, yellow, and red when we really started paying attention to it. But Stephen Cardenas as Rocky DeSantos, mm-hmm. Karen Ashley as Aisha Campbell, Johnny Young Bosch as Adam Park, the new villain, Lord Zedd.
Oh, yes.
Which was the first original character to, at least the first original like villain.
Oh, yeah.
To the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers.
Super sinister looking. Mm-hmm. I used the word iconic mm-hmm. last week. Again, I mentioned that it gets thrown around a lot on social media and stuff. But really, in that world, an iconic-looking villain.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Robert Axelrod does the voice. Mm-hmm. Last week, we mentioned he did the voice of Finster.
Yeah.
Robert Axelrod does the voice of Lord Zedd.
Yeah.
With Carla Perez now as the on-camera Rita Repulsa.
Yeah, because now the American footage is using, like, they cast an American
mm-hmm.
as Rita Repulsa.
Yeah. Which helps the dubbing very much, because Barbara Goodson is still the voice, but the dubbing is probably a lot easier because mm-hmm. her mouth phonetically is following.
It matches the words.
Matches the words and everything. But the season started off, and like the first 20 episodes essentially were like really good.
They hit the ground running.
Oh, yeah.
Like big time. With the mm-hmm. with the introduction of Lord Zedd, the stakes were like higher at this, because Zedd mm-hmm. and his monsters mm-hmm. were far more powerful than anything Rita doled out on the Power Rangers.
Yeah.
And something I didn't realize until listening to the episode, we didn't touch on Rita a whole lot.
Oh,
Rita
yeah.
was the main villain mm-hmm. in the first season.
Yeah.
Like, it's her space dumpster
mm-hmm.
that, like, she was trapped in for 10,000 years. It's part of the intro. After 10,000 years, I'm free. Mm-hmm. Time to conquer Earth.
Yeah.
And basically, Zordon gets these teenagers with attitude together to fight off Rita. Mm-hmm. And every week, it's her goal to destroy the Power Rangers. Mm-hmm. And Zedd comes in, mm-hmm. and we find out that Rita worked for Zedd.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and Goldar, just by circumstance, was Rita's, like, soldier.
Mm-hmm.
And so they both worked for Zedd. And essentially, Zedd's like, I'm going to go conquer the universe. Earth is so inconsequential. Here, Rita, you do it.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, he comes back and he's like, I'm just going to do this because you've proved so ineffective.
Mm-hmm.
And not only am I taking away your throne, I'm putting you back in that space dumpster and sending you back out to space.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, he comes in as this new force
mm-hmm.
and he keeps Goldar on, gives him his wings back and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And, we just hit the ground running.
Yeah.
And if I'm not mistaken, I think you even texted me that because it starts off with a three-part arc.
Yeah.
Was the entire three-part arc in on network TV or with just the season premiere?
I didn't look into that. I just know the season premiere was in prime time.
Yeah.
Which is a big deal.
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it just goes to show that the series, because now up to this point, I believe the series until, because there was a couple months between seasons, the end of season one and the start of season two, yeah. And at that point, I'm positive it was shown in syndication, so sure. It only got more popular. It reached more
absolutely.
Countries,
yeah.
So they had, I mean, it's almost, it's going big time, and yeah. It feels that way with the mutiny, the three-parter at the beginning of season two, and. Like you had mentioned, they had to up the ante, and the production mm-hmm. team was like, okay, we're 5 days a week now. It's time to really, you know, add more tension to make the threats greater and, yeah. you know, try to give situations the Rangers are more resourceful. You know, yeah. really adding on what season one built.
Great start, because mm-hmm. Lord Zedd brings the heat for mm-hmm. sure.
Yeah, and, you know, we start out with, you know, all the Rangers together. And we're not going to, for those of you just jumping on to season two and you didn't listen to our season one retrospective, we're not going to get super granular with episodes.
Yeah.
We are wanting to, as of right now, maybe next year, do a episode-by-episode review.
Yeah, to where we'll get a bit more detailed yeah. with those specifically.
Yeah. But we see all the Rangers we're familiar with, and then we see Zedd. And Zedd, out of the gate, he's scarier looking.
Oh, yeah.
He packs more of a punch, and he's more dead set on mm-hmm. taking out the Rangers and Zordon and Alpha.
Yeah.
And you believe it.
Yeah. More specifically, the Green Ranger.
Yeah.
Because as we know from season one, he's on borrowed time. The mm-hmm. Green Ranger, not
yeah.
Tommy.
Right.
But still, you feel as though, like, the way that they build it mm-hmm. in the first 13 episodes or so, especially, you almost feel like you're going to lose Tommy as well. Mm-hmm. Like, they're treating him like he has, like, terminal cancer or
yeah.
something. When you step back, it's like, oh, he's just going to lose his Green Ranger power. But that became part of his identity.
Yeah.
And to the audience, he became a centerpiece of the team
mm-hmm.
and became an extremely popular character.
Yeah.
So you as an audience member, you're witnessing the beginning of an end. And the way that they're writing it mm-hmm. and treating it, within the context of a kid's show, is actually pretty good.
Yeah.
Like, and you kind of... you feel the tension rise
mm-hmm.
just as each episode goes by, and his power starts waning and waning mm-hmm. and waning. And it doesn't help that Zordon,
yeah.
but Lord Zedd,
yes.
Lord Zedd focuses his attention specifically on the Green mm-hmm. Ranger, because he kind of sees him as Rita's greatest failure.
Yeah.
Like, he had all this power, he had the Dragon Zord, the powerful Dragon Zord, mm-hmm. the green dragon coin, and you lost him. You mm-hmm. lost him over to Zordon. And because of that, I'm going to focus all my attention on draining his power even mm-hmm. quicker and taking him out of the equation.
Yeah, and that's pretty much the strongest story arc
yeah.
of the season. And it's kind of discouraging, at least in retrospect, watching
yeah.
these, is to see that really the residual, stories, the residual mm-hmm. footage, all kind of residual stuff
yeah.
from the first season is the best part of season two.
Yeah.
Not knocking parts of season two, because
yeah.
I like Rocky, Adam, and Aisha.
I do too. I really like
Adam. Adam's still one
Adam
of my favorite Power Rangers.
Adam is such a peaceful soul.
Mm-hmm.
He's such... just a wonderful...
He's a tender fella.
He's a tender fella. He's a cutie patootie, mm-hmm. as Rosie O'Donnell used to say.
Yes.
He's awesome.
Yeah. And we'll get to him, momentarily here. But the strongest parts of season two is when they come out of the gate with what season one
yeah.
built. And the first, big story arc of season two is Tommy losing the Green Ranger power.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's concerned. So many
yeah.
of the stories are built around... the Green Ranger, about he's on borrowed time.
Yeah.
He's very limited. He can't really do much energy-wise unless he's revitalized by Zordon.
Yeah.
It's all these things. But they crafted it so well that he's kind of the main focus, but also, nobody really plays a secondary role.
No.
Even though, like, everyone's focus is, I hope Tommy's okay. Where's Tommy? Everybody
yeah.
still has their own thing. Jason is still clearly the leader,
yeah.
even though in season one you could see Tommy developing these leadership tendencies.
Yeah.
Him and Jason are two strongest martial artists. You could
yeah.
see him even overshadowing Jason in ways.
Mm-hmm.
But they wrote him in such a way, and this is also a testament to Jason David Frank and delivering the character,
yeah.
that he still had that air of, I still have reverence for Jason.
Yeah.
He's my friend. A lot of, you got a buddy and stuff like that. Yeah, but he lets, like, Jason leads and he follows Jason's lead.
Exactly. And like, you can't help but feel for the Green Ranger mm-hmm. too, because he's the only ranger that seems to be, that really goes through the most tribulation.
Mm-hmm.
Like their powers aren't going to be threatened because Zordon created them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they do get threatened, but it's not as much of an issue as like the Green Ranger.
Mm-hmm.
And he has to deal with, I'm sure he still deals with the guilt of like fighting against his friends, even mm-hmm. though he was redeemed
mm-hmm.
and he's so far removed from that and is way more of a ranger than he ever is Rita's puppet. But that's got to be some sort of, there's got to be some residual guilt there. And even, I think even in the Boom Studios comics,
mm-hmm.
they touch on that.
Yeah.
But because he caught the ire of Rita and now Lord Zedd, like, he goes through the most tribulation. He was, again, evil under Rita. He loses power. He regained in a limited capacity, like we said last week. He's constantly aware of his own mortality as a ranger. He's evil briefly again
mm-hmm.
in an episode leading up to him losing his power.
Mm-hmm.
And also in another story arc, they recreate the evil Green Ranger.
Yeah.
But we'll touch when we talk about notable yeah. story arcs. Through it all, he was selfless, though.
Mm-hmm.
Ultimate team player, like you said, he was always encouraging of Jason. Always had a reverence mm-hmm. for him, encouraging of his friends.
Took his limited power and stride.
Yeah, exactly. Recognized in the field
mm-hmm.
when he would be a liability and removed himself.
Mm-hmm.
And then when it was his time to step up, when all the other Rangers were in peril, understanding his own mortality as a Ranger,
mm-hmm.
he still had the courage to go out and endure mm-hmm. whatever threat was out there.
Yeah.
So eventually when he becomes the White Ranger later in the season, I can't think of a better leader.
Yeah,
to
exactly.
be appointed in Jason's place. Mm-hmm.
And they use it a couple times to help to, you know, kind of address issues with other characters. Like, prime example,
yeah.
I think it's after Green, the episode after Green No More, like Tommy has sequestered himself off to his uncle's cabin.
Yeah.
He's taking a break from the Rangers.
To kind of deal with it.
And Jason is dealing with a lot of guilt because in season one in the Green Candle, he had a chance to destroy the Green
yep.
Candle and kind of restore the Green Rangers' powers
mm-hmm.
Or to keep them from draining.
Yeah.
And he's like, he's really, really guilty over it.
Sure.
And like Zach is telling him, you know, essentially what's addressed at the end, like, you know, Tommy forgives you, mm-hmm. you know, all that stuff, but Jason's still beating himself up over it. And although it's a self-contained story of
yeah.
the episode, all the other Rangers have candles put against them by Lord Zedd
yeah.
to kind of drain their power the same
okay,
way
yeah.
and it's on Jason, and Jason redeems himself. And at the
yeah.
end of that episode, they get a letter from Tommy from his uncle's cabin saying, hey man, you know, I forgive you, I don't blame you,
yeah,
like, it happened how it happened. You know, you guys are still my friends. I'm always a Power Ranger. And that's
yeah.
before the White Light episode.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, that's before the White
yeah.
Light episode.
Yeah, it is.
Because
yeah.
That's also the beginning of the end of the original stuff with Austin St. John, Tui Trang, and
yeah.
Walter Jones, which we'll get into like in just a second here.
We do with the threat of Zedd now,
mm-hmm.
he has his putties.
Yeah,
he has his monsters.
Yeah.
They're far more powerful.
Oh, yeah.
And Zordon and Alpha recognize that, and they create the Thunder Zords.
Yeah, which that's the start of the using of the Gosei
yeah.
Sentai footage.
Yeah.
Which, using different footage than, because the Zhuranger costumes are what's used throughout all three seasons.
Mm-hmm.
And like we said, in season one, it's easier to use the archived footage or the already established footage, the footage they got
yeah.
from Japan with the Zhuranger Sentai footage. Now it's going to pose a little more of a problem editing wise
yeah.
and building story wise now that they're starting to implement the Gosei footage. And they do that with the Thunder Zords.
Yeah.
To which the Thunder Zords still have a connection to the
dinosaurs.
The dinosaurs.
They're made from the template of the dinosaurs.
That's why they still can, you know, use Tyrannosaurus, Mastodon, Saber-tooth tiger, all that stuff. And that'll fully be kaput in season three. But there's still that connection, even though they don't use the dinosaurs anymore. Yeah. They use the Thunderzords.
When they morph, they still say the dinosaur names.
So that's how they can kind of keep consistency as well. But as the season goes on and they start to run out of the Zhu 2 footage, then more kind of glaring mistakes come up. But yeah, just back to the season premiere. I texted you when I was watching it, and it could have been an hour-long season premiere in prime time. It felt very much like a not on the scale of the movie,
but it's pretty close.
It felt like a movie.
Like it could have been a TV movie.
Like the fight scenes were out of costume, were super dynamic.
More Ron Wasserman. Mm-hmm. Because we mentioned last, Ron Wasserman was the composer of the main theme.
Mm-hmm.
All the music, like when they're fighting, mm-hmm. like music for like the Green Ranger, for the White Ranger.
Yeah.
There's a lot more Ron Wasserman music in this season, mm-hmm. which I'm not complaining.
Yeah.
But that fight scene was it like...
Like the first out of costume
yeah,
one.
Like if we couldn't get the originals in the actual movie, this was a very close second.
Yeah. It really, really... exhibited how strong the team was as a unit, how strong everybody was.
They were veterans at this point.
They were veterans. And this, out of everything, I mean, later in the first season, Billy, for example, later in the first season, you saw Billy is able to handle himself in mm-hmm. fights, but you see him as the geek, as the one who's kind of like almost cowardly in his role, but running away, and it's almost like incidental, like contact is how he's beating the putties. And this, he's kicking ass.
Yep.
Everybody is capable. When Zed's putties come down, it's where we first see hit the Z, and that becomes kind of part of, you know, in later multiple parters or later mm-hmm. stories in the season, that's how the issue with those putties are resolved.
The Z emblem on the middle of their chest.
On the middle of the chest. There's so much more menace to it.
I know, but it starts off so hot.
But also, to meet that menace, you know, of course, Zordon realizes that the Dinozords aren't strong enough to face Zed's new threats. Yeah. So introduce the Thunderzords, so that's up in the ante. That's adding a new element that's making the Rangers stronger.
Yep.
But again, so much of the out-of-costume stuff appeals to me more as an adult. I think that's why I take it harder that, like, we lose the original Black, Red, and Yellow Rangers in this season.
And the way they did it was such a rough transition.
Yeah. And just a second here, we'll jump into that, because that's a huge part of what makes this season different. But just with these first, the green no more story arc before mm-hmm. all the white light stuff with the White Ranger, it's the strongest offering of the season, because the Rangers are, like you said, they're vets, they're stronger. Mm-hmm. I think the fights are shot really well.
Yeah.
The choreography of the group fights are great.
Yeah.
Any combination of any of the Rangers mm-hmm. Are great pairings.
And it's some of the last times we'll actually see all of them together.
Mm-hmm. So it's really special. It's almost like it's season two, but what season two would become, I see it as like a bonus to season one.
Yeah.
But
I will say, because we talked about toys last week, the Thunder Megazord
is a sweet toy.
It looks like a samurai.
Yeah.
Which is really awesome. But we won't keep delaying it.
For those of you that are familiar with the history of the show and you're familiar with this time and then how we're getting closer to the power transfer of these the new characters, you know the controversy behind the scenes. And the controversy didn't start in season two, but it culminated a lot in what led to the departure of Austin St. John, Tui Trang, mm-hmm. and Walter Jones. And I wrote down some stuff about the departures, some background stuff.
I've got some stuff as well, to help supplement.
Yeah, essentially, right from the beginning, it was a non-union production,
mm-hmm.
which with that, nobody on the production crew, actors, crew was a part of SAG, so you don't get the benefits from that, Screen Actors Guild.
So when you're doing your own stunts, that's all, because they all did pretty much their own stunts.
Yeah.
So that already poses a problem when you don't have health insurance. What if you get hurt?
Yeah. No guidelines for pay or protecting crew. The pay fluctuates really at the leisure of whoever's running the production. Mm-hmm. In this case, it's Haim Saban, which also I know we kind of said, you know, visionary in the first, yeah, in our season one retrospective. We don't regret that because someone can still be a visionary, yeah, and be not a good person.
Yep.
And that's Haim Saban.
Yep. Never said I liked him, just said he's, yeah, a visionary.
Exactly. So we weren't giving him much praise. We were just saying like, oh yeah, that's a good idea.
Yep.
And also I think we also mentioned how it was parallel thinking with Stan Lee. So yeah, it wasn't a wholly original to Haim Saban idea because, yep, Margaret Lash had heard it before. But Haim Saban is not a good guy.
Nope.
And if you do a little more reading, this guy made billions of dollars with,
yes,
with the popularity of season one, with marketing deals, with advertisement,
toys,
with toys, with sponsorship, all this stuff that you can make buku bucks from
off the backs of these,
exactly,
actors.
So with the pay fluctuating, some projects count, you know, as exposure if you're a non-union actor. So I think that's how he saw it. And they see if you're not protected by a union,
mm-hmm,
there can be showrunners who are like, they could just say exposure is your pay.
Yeah,
you know, they can pay you peanuts and say, I, you know, you could complain. They'd be like, well, I'm not legally, yeah, obligated to pay you at all.
You're beefing up your acting reel, mm-hmm, to get you more jobs.
Yeah. So, which I believe was the selling point to the Ranger actors. Saban went non-union to avoid aspects of making a TV show, like paying the performers, you know, insurance.
Yeah.
But don't worry, he spent, you know, some money to make craft services pretty good. I can't pay my bills with donuts.
Yeah, but you got the cheesecake.
Yeah, exactly.
You got cheesecake. Isn't that nice?
That's wonderful.
And that I don't even know if they got cheesecake.
Breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
Yeah, exactly.
Actors were paid $600 a week, which is like peanuts considering all that was being asked of them.
Oh, yeah. Austin St. John, in a later 2014 interview, was like, I could have been making more in the drive-thru at McDonald's.
Mm-hmm. Like full-time.
Yeah,
definitely.
Full-time.
Saban further took advantage of the production status by not giving actors any royalties. So he got all of the money.
Yeah.
Saban took advantage of how fresh the actors were. The fact that these were all of these actors were new,
yeah,
to like something like this.
They have nothing to compare it,
yeah,
to. Yeah.
So Saban took advantage of that, and the advantage of the fact that they had inexperience and ignorance towards contracts.
Yeah.
As time went on, the actors recognized just how huge the show was getting. They got together to talk with Haim Saban and Saban Entertainment to make it a union production. That way the actors could be paid more, have benefits and protection, and start reaping the rewards for their contribution, mm-hmm, to the show's success.
Yeah.
Talks always fell through, and out of frustration and protest, Austin St. John, Tui Trang, and Walter Emmanuel Jones stopped showing up to voiceover sessions. They held out as long as they could in their battle for better treatment, but enough was enough, and Haim Saban decided to just recast their colors. And their mindset was, you're just people under helmets anyway. We can recast
fuck
you.
Fuck that.
Yeah.
Fuck him. Fuck that.
Mm-hmm. And it took until 2018 when Haim Saban sold to Hasbro for the show to become union performers. So the show was on for 25 years, mm-hmm, or Power Rangers as a whole,
yeah,
had been running for 25 years before they essentially had union performers.
Yeah. Do you know whether or not, at that point, Hasbro started paying Austin St. John or Walter Jones?
I'm curious what the... Because Austin St. John came back for about 20 episodes of Zio.
Yeah.
It might have been like 15. It was
he was homeless after the show.
Yeah, the thing is, he came back to be the Gold Ranger, Power Ranger,
yeah,
Zio. And I feel like it's just... I hate thinking that it was a come crawling back,
yeah,
moment, just because, yeah, he was homeless for a little,
yeah,
bit after the show, because the statement that Tui Trang, Walter Emmanuel Jones, and Austin St. John gave pretty much said, well, we have other offers that we'd like to pursue to further our careers. You know, it's a
bluff, probably. Or maybe not. I don't know.
Or it's just, you know, a PR statement.
Yeah.
Just so you're not
bringing
heat
as
on,
they're on
Saban.
Their way out.
Yeah. But they didn't have anything lined up.
Right.
Like, Tui Trang did an interview, and it was like her, Austin St. John, and Walter Jones with James Hong. Mm-hmm. I don't know what it was for. It was like a 2-minute clip I watched yesterday. And she was like, yeah, we have this project coming up, blah, blah, blah. And I looked up IMDb. It's possible it could have fallen through. There was no credit for
that,
it.
Okay, that's what they told, like, in interviews to make it not seem like there's, like, drama or they're being mistreated.
Because they went to court anyway with Saban Entertainment.
Yeah.
And I'm sure it was just to put out the flames per an agreement or whatever. Yeah. I don't know all the legalese. I don't know the ins and outs of what happened. All I know is they knew their worth, and they knew the worth of their castmates.
Yeah.
And they all, you know, they brought this concern to the others. And David Yost, Amy Jo Johnson, and Jason David Frank agreed. Yeah. They all agreed. And Jason David Frank originally was going to go with them and protest. But it ended up just being the three of them. And I will say, Austin St. John, I watched an interview he did with Karen Ashley for her show Uncensored.
Yeah.
It was like the first video version of it.
Yeah.
And he said he didn't begrudge, even at that time, he didn't begrudge them at all.
Yeah.
Because he's like, I understood. Like, I understood. Mm-hmm. Like, this, you know, we were bold enough to make that stance. The other three were frustrated, and later on, Amy Jo Johnson expressed regret that she didn't go with them, that all of them didn't go with them, because if they all together went in and demanded more money,
then they would have
essentially
been forced to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because now you have to go out and find six new Rangers as opposed to three, which knowing Haim Saban, at least a little bit of what I know, I'm sure he would have tried that.
Mm-hmm.
Which, I mean, just Jason David Frank alone, if you recast him, you're going to lose a lot of viewers.
Yeah.
But, you know, Amy Jo Johnson expressed regret that all six of them didn't go in together, even though all six of them were feeling that way.
Yeah.
And Austin St. John said it wasn't just the actors. It was everybody on the production crew. We're getting paid. I mean, they're getting paid way lower than what they deserved because of all the work everybody put into the show and the success of the show. Haim Saban, all he did was he promoted to business bigwigs. He wasn't in on the ground floor making this train run.
Yeah.
But it's his name on it. I think I told you it's close to like a Bob Kane situation.
Yeah.
To where there's other contributors, but Bob Kane reaped the benefits of Batman for
so
many
long.
Years.
Yeah.
Just because his name was on it. That's a different story.
All of this, like, the behind-the-scenes stuff, the way they treated it on screen, that remark about how you're just people in helmets.
Mm-hmm.
Well, guess what? The way they handled it on screen after they were holding out and like they weren't filmed together with everyone, they did just put people in suits and helmets. And guess what? It was so fucking noticeable.
It was so bad.
Yeah.
Those were some of the toughest episodes to get through. So after white light,
the ADR was awful.
After white light, and it started. White light is when the White Ranger comes in.
Yeah.
It started right before white light. I mentioned the episode where Jason has to go in and get all the other Rangers' candles that Zed creates. There's some glaring ADR. Like, it's a stunt.
Try and get sound alikes, quote unquote.
It's like they're trying to use that, like, the masculine, no way, Zed, like that Austin St. John
it's
does.
So but, totally but not
it's
them.
Like, no way.
Yeah.
Like,
and Trini is like literal, like, stock Asian voice.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean,
not like the offensive, not like L's for R's and stuff like that.
Not like exaggerated, like stereotype,
but like the people, they don't sound anything like them.
No.
It's clearly different people.
The guy doing Zach sounds like a white person doing a quote unquote black person voice.
It's just,
it's bad.
It's so embarrassing.
Yeah.
And it's such a black spot on the end of their tenure, and it's so bittersweet because by that point they weren't even on screen together anymore.
Mm-mm.
Like, you'd get the fights with body doubles, you'd have body doubles and scenes in the command center, but as far as all the actors together, they used stock footage.
Yeah. And the thing is, this is where it comes in with the glaring obvious editing mistakes.
Yeah.
Now, I said before white light there was an episode where you could tell there was, you know, someone else dubbing over in costume Austin St. John stuff. And there was, but after white light for the remaining, I think there was a couple more episodes to where they used original footage or they used like newer out of costume footage stuff that was original to season two of Austin St. John, Tui Trang, and Walter Jones. But the last eight episodes, it's just a hodgepodge of people doing, you know, voice doubles, body doubles. Of course, you know, people, there's just stunt people in the suits. And it just, it's made more obvious, that Jason is still has leadership things. He still has main character things. And that knowing what we know now, like you'd said, it's so tough to watch. It's so tough to get through. Those were the most deflating episodes for me to watch.
Sorry, go ahead.
Deflating
is a great word for it.
It was super deflating. It was such a the most anticlimactic end to the run of three of the most popular characters and three, you know, cornerstone characters to the to team development, to stories develop, to story developments, how they interacted with everybody else, help grow other characters they interacted with. So it spits in the face of that. Now, again, within the context of when the show came out, it is kids. It's still kids watching. And a kid, unless you were a super astute
and kid, observant.
An observant kid, and you recognize, you know, Zach has different hair in this footage than in the other, or this this is footage from this episode. There's no way a kid could pick up on the fact that it was different. You're like, oh, it's
different people in the costumes,
different people in the costumes, but that it was also like already used footage from season one, deleted footage, stock footage, all these things. You're not going to notice that stuff. You notice that it's still Jason, Zach, and Trini, but they're still Power Rangers.
I will say, I feel like even a kid would notice the different ADR. I think even a kid would sit there and be like, that doesn't sound like Jason. That doesn't sound
especially
like Trini.
An older kid.
Yeah,
I think an older kid would pick up on that.
Yeah, and if they've watched every week, they know how these characters sound. Mm-hmm. So any slight difference, it's like something's off here.
Yeah, but as a whole, I feel like it didn't dawn on them, maybe. But it's tough as an adult, like watching all this. And it just, from that point on, and it sucks also that the White Ranger got swept up in all that, because the White Ranger is one of the best Rangers for a reason.
Oh, for sure. And Tommy got his due,
being
put in command as the White Ranger.
Yeah, all of the back behind the scenes stuff set aside.
Yeah.
And as of right now, Austin St. John and Walter Jones are best friends.
Yeah.
Tui Trang unfortunately passed away in 2001, which is really, really sad, because by all accounts, Trini is one of the best characters.
Yeah.
But by all accounts, Tui Trang was just a beautiful person.
Yeah.
Jason David Frank
tragically passed away last year.
We're still going to see more of him as a ranger, both now and in the future of the show. But Tui Trang, this was it
her
as a ranger.
David Yost and Amy Jo Johnson are our best friends.
They all see each other at cons. They keep up with one another. So and also Austin St. John, of course, worked with Johnny Young Bosch and Steve Cardenas on Zio, and they became friends. And Karen Ashley's tight-knit with everybody.
Yeah.
Like, it's a tight-knit community. So that, in spite of Haim Saban, there was no division or derision between the cast members and the replacements.
They have a shared, trauma, almost.
They all are still, if not close, Paul Schreier and Jason Narvi to Bulk and Skull, which they had cool development.
Yeah.
Well, they had different development.
Yeah.
I liked it because they're both great.
Yeah, they had to give those characters something to do.
Yeah.
Because just being bullies was growing stale.
Yeah.
So basically their goal for the whole season was to discover the identity of the Power Rangers.
That was another thing in response to parents not really liking all the bullying going on with Bulk and Skull, even though they were seen as slapstick characters in the first season. They were put in these situations with more hijinks to make them more bumbling, if anything, to kind of take away any edge that they had.
Yeah.
And that it also established that they did that for every other season of Power Rangers they were in.
Yeah.
That there was their arc throughout the whole season of whatever Power Ranger show was, we need to do this, we need to find out the identity of the Power Rangers. But just to go back to behind the scenes stuff, they're all tight to this day.
Yeah.
And the thing is, it just added further into how just set apart the season was in almost a negative way.
Yeah.
There was no, it wasn't cohesive like the first season. All of this started coming to a head. Not just, you know, the replacement, the writing on the wall
for the
original actors and for the production team, and them having to like scramble
to
try and put episodes together, and it just was a mess. It just, the show as a whole starting to get out of using the Zhu Ranger footage or the Zhu 2 footage and start having to use in the Gosei Die Ranger footage. It started posing a problem for editors because the Zhu Ranger suits are what they had to use, but in Japan, those Sentai shows change suits every season.
Oh, yeah.
So having to work around that with the monsters from the Gosei series, with the Zords from the Gosei series, you never saw them using the Zords themselves. You only saw the Thunder Zord being used. And then with the White Ranger,
there's a lot of White Ranger footage towards just the White Ranger in like fight and battles and stuff.
Because I'm going to get into like something I never knew here in a second.
I think I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. But also it was almost in a way like this team was stronger, but then it kind of, they got quote unquote defanged a little bit as the show went on. Cause again, in response to parental uproar, they started using the melee weapons less and less, power axe, power bow, power lance, all that stuff. And they started using those less and less because of the critiques of violence against, you know, that the show was presenting. Also, there wasn't many resources to film new weapon combat scenes.
Right.
Because not only would Haim Saban not pay the actors or the crew, he probably wouldn't fork over money for the production.
Oh, no.
Either. So
why would he do that when he could just keep all of it?
Yeah, exactly. So instead of like trying to film new footage with the Zhu Rangers costumes you already have. And again, I will also say the production schedule was much the same as we talked about in the first season.
Yeah.
Multiple shows being filmed at once. Then when you're done filming the show, you do the ADR.
Yeah.
You do all these different things, and the editors have to put in the Sentai footage.
Yeah.
So I know it's tough, but it is one of those things where like concessions were made, whether or not it's availability, money not wanting to be spent. It was a mess.
Yeah.
And especially, it just made it that much more tough to start working around what you could use from the Sentai series and what you had to film in America when you started bringing in the White Ranger. Now, the White Ranger is undeniably...
might be the most popular Ranger ever.
And I know Green Ranger definitely a lot... I mean, Green Ranger still might be the most popular, but like over like the red, Jason's Red Ranger, the White Ranger probably is the most popular.
White Ranger look, and plus the look stands out. He doesn't look like any of the other Rangers.
No.
The Green Ranger had the gold shield, but once he took that shield off, he still had like the diamond patterns like every other Ranger.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And one thing they did right was I feel like the White Light parts 1 and 2 next to the Mutiny was probably the best that season had done because it felt earned.
Yeah,
like
for
him,
sure.
It wasn't some new kid showing up, you know, at the beginning of part one and then him being revealed as the Ranger, which I think they did well with bringing in the new actors for White, Yellow, and Black. But we knew Tommy.
Yeah.
Everything we talked about season one, what we've talked about in season two so far, Jason David Frank, the writing team, you know, just the team around him really established him. You know, there's a reason he's popular. Really established him as just a good character.
A good Ranger. He exemplifies a lot of what makes them great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and his reveal as the White Ranger is much more satisfying after watching his journey from seasons 1 and 2. Zordon tells the Rangers that the green power was lost, but Tommy has shown courage and to be brave and true. His inner strength has shown to be his power, and his honor has made him worthy to be the new White Ranger and leader of the team.
Yeah.
So that was also something that you could tell them phasing out Jason as the leader as well, because there was still 8 episodes of the White Ranger that Jason was second in command. And
to
Jason's credit, whether or not it was Austin St. John or the character's choice to be okay with being quote-unquote second fiddle, because that's just the nature of how they tried to work around him. I think that's just how it happened to be.
Yeah.
Was he was second fiddle because they weren't using new footage still to establish the character in that moment.
Right.
They were using stock footage.
Mm-hmm. And I will say, I'll let you finish what you're going to say about the White Ranger.
Yeah. It's a power forged in the white light of goodness out of the hands of Zed and never to be extinguished. So the White Ranger almost seems like he has unlimited power.
Oh, yeah.
And he is the White Tiger Zord and Saba.
Saba's great.
Yeah. So Saba's
great toy, too.
It's really... Oh, yeah. It's a sentient weapon. So yeah. Saba talks. He has conversations with Tommy.
Yeah, exactly.
Shoots lasers.
Shoots lasers. And as far as melee weapons go, Saba, I think, is the only one that's really used.
Yeah.
Now in the Die Ranger show, this is where it made it very, very tricky. Also for the editors,
because
the Ranger in the Gosei Die Ranger Sentai show is a citizen who becomes a Ranger, but although that's cool to think about,
sure,
there's a problem with that fact when it came to translating to Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, and that's the citizen in the Japanese show was a 9-year-old who grows to adult size when he's in the suit. Now, for those of you who remember, or those of you familiar with the Power Rangers as a whole, that's Power Rangers Turbo.
Turbo, they did that with the Blue Ranger.
Yeah.
Essentially, he's a little boy.
He's a 12-year-old kid.
Yeah, who when he morphs, he grows into an adult size.
Yeah. And when in the Sentai show, the 9-year-old, when he's in costume, when he's fighting, his movement was more childlike and clumsy.
Yeah.
And knowing this, they knew they couldn't have Tommy looking inferior like that or awkward next to the other Rangers.
Yeah.
So no one would buy it. So they recreated the white suit, filmed new footage with the Rangers, and Tommy would fight alone.
Yeah.
So you had mentioned that before. And because of this, outside of the original footage shot for the show, his appearance in the Gosei Die Ranger was limited as well. Like, the production team had to work, the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers production team had to work around the fact that there wasn't as much Sentai footage to work with involving the White Ranger.
Yep.
It took so long in the Gosei show to introduce him, and when he did show up morphed, he barely fought or interacted with the other five, or he also would just fanboy out and jump around from the sidelines. And then also in the Sentai show, his Zord appearances were also said to be super random.
Yeah.
So that being said, the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers production crew had to be savvy and especially creative with their editing, which their attempts weren't always the smoothest.
Yeah.
Footage with the Kyber Ranger, or the Kybe Ranger, which is his name in the Sentai show, in the cockpit of what became known in Power Rangers as the White Tiger Zord was used, but not much footage outside of that using White Tiger... Not much using the White Tiger footage outside of just the cockpit, because he was interacting with the Gosei Rangers,
right,
who were different suits and everything. So that proved to be very tricky, also with Thunder Zord stuff interacting with the monsters created from the Zhu 2 footage carried over from Season 1, having an actor interact with the Thunder Zord. And sometimes the edits would be as such to where, like, the monster was still hitting the Megazord, even though the Megazord didn't show up at all.
Yeah. And it also explains that there was a lot more American footage with the White Ranger.
Oh, yeah. So let's just jump on to the second biggest story arc of the season. That's Power Transfer.
Yeah. And so Rocky, Adam, and Aisha were introduced before this episode. Mm-hmm. This was the episode to where officially they became Rangers.
Yeah.
Before this, I mean, what they were in, like, what, 4 or 5 episodes before this kind of build those characters and introduce you to them.
You know, and they were allies to the Rangers because also they're the first people to know who the Rangers are.
Yeah.
Due to their first appearance, the character's first appearance, they end up, they're trapped in a cave with Zed wanting to make them his Dark Rangers.
Yeah.
And, you know, Billy, Kim, and Tommy come save them, but Billy is, like, fighting off a creature that was going to poison them.
Yeah.
And to get some air, I guess, Kim had to take his helmet off, and Rocky, Adam, and Aisha came back into the cave, and they're like, you guys are the Power Rangers?
And, like, and it's like, and the Full House music starts, down, 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 down.
Yeah.
No, that didn't happen.
But with that, Zordon gave them access to the command center. Well, so a couple times they were called to the command center to help out the Rangers when they were in peril.
So there's a familiarity.
Yeah.
And Zordon could see promise in them. And plus, just as characters, they're from Stone Canyon High School, not Angel Grove. And they were introduced as three competitors in a ninja competition.
Yeah.
Which I was like, that's so cool.
Mm-hmm. Like, to just introduce them, this is how capable they are as fighters. And then we would see, as it would go on, they were goody two shoes like all the other Power Rangers.
Exactly.
They exemplified the positive traits of good as opposed to evil.
Yes.
But essentially, with their appearance also comes the mentioning of the World Peace Summit in Switzerland, which is the reason they wrote off Tui Trang, Austin St. John, and Walter Jones onto the show, or off of the show, was Rocky, not Rocky,
Jason
Trini and Zach were representatives of Angel Grove at the Peace Conference, which the shining part of what I can take from their departure is, although it was using stock footage to show Trini, Zach, and Jason, Zordon, once the power transfer happened, like, because now Rocky, Adam, and Aisha, right before they go out to fight with as the new Rangers, they do the power transfer. Trini, Zach, and Jason from Zordon, he tells them that they have a higher calling now.
Yeah.
They will use what they learned as Power Rangers to help the world, thus continuing the fight to save it. Although they are unsure if they should leave while Zed is about to unleash their greatest threat, Zordon assures them that their participation in their last mission and obtaining the Sword of Light, which is how the transfer would happen, has ensured the endurance of the Power Rangers. Zordon urges them to go and make the world a better place. The power will always be with you and always protect you.
Mm-hmm.
And it stinks. He told this to them while the stunt people were in costume.
I know.
So he didn't tell it to them with Walter, Tui, and Austin there as their season two selves.
Yeah, when the costumes transfer over to the new Rangers, it's still body doubles in those costumes. It just would have meant more if you could just somehow get I don't care if it's stock footage, just footage of them looking at Zordon out of costume, and then you've got to have stock footage of the three of them looking up at Zordon and then being transported out of the command center.
Yeah. Or at least film something in somewhere that you can make it look like an airport, and at the end of the episode you can have the Rangers seeing them off, saying bye. Instead it was just, at the end of the episode, Trini, Zach, and Jason stand-ins through the other Rangers are looking through the viewing globe at Trini, Zach, and Jason's stand-ins, body doubles.
At the airport.
Out of
suits.
They're not in their Power Ranger costumes.
Yeah.
All they're saying is, bye, guys. Oh, I'm going to miss them. Just
wait.
And I'm like,
get to see them off.
It's so it's such an unceremonious end. But Rocky's chosen for her strength and knowledge. Aisha for her spirit and she's spirited and clever. Adam is watchful and intelligent.
And a cutie patootie.
Yes. But I will say the one thing that made it better for me is now they can finally start showing the Rangers in and out of costume and unity to the team again.
Yeah.
Because that was the thing that really, really, was one of the biggest thorns in my side. Just to kind of reiterate what we've already said, is so much of the unity as a team was built in the first season and carried into the second season to a point that not seeing that for almost 10 episodes was really, really affected how I looked at the show.
Oh, sure.
Because that was the appealing thing.
Oh,
both as a kid, with seeing these teenagers, these role models, being friends with one another and doing good things, and then going out and fighting in super suits, that was the appealing thing. And now that element's taken away when I know that they're not all interacting.
Yeah.
Or it's Billy, Tommy, and Kim at the juice bar, having their moments together. And where's Jason, Zach, and Trini? It's like, oh, they're scuba diving.
Yeah, it just feels weird to not see them where they're at.
Mm-hmm.
Like when they mention, oh, they're there, and you're used to a cut to them on the beach somewhere.
Yeah. I will say I did like they weren't trying to make Rocky, Adam, and Aisha analogs for the other characters. They had their own characters.
Yeah.
They were their own characters
once,
in their own right.
Once we get through that rough none of this, we don't begrudge those characters or those actors for this.
Like I mentioned,
those
at
are
the
good
beginning,
characters.
Like I mentioned at the beginning, they were in a way our Power Rangers when we started watching the newer episodes.
Yeah. They contribute to the team, and it is cool to see them now as Rangers.
Uh-huh.
And once we get past that rough transition,
mm-hmm.
now we can see it in its new identity. It turns the corner and now we can, this is the Ranger team.
Yeah. You know, they're as much as they can, they still try and create stories around those characters.
Yeah.
Adam deals with self-confidence. Aisha learns that, you have to be clear-headed and allow people to help you and not try and take things on yourself, because you could hurt yourself. You could compromise the others.
Yeah.
And then also it helps to further build Tommy. He continues to prove himself as a great leader by allowing the new Rangers to grow and thrive in their roles.
Yeah.
He encourages them, never gives a sense that he looks down on them. He builds them up, fights alongside them as equals, is humble enough to let them work where they may have strength that he doesn't.
Yeah.
Jason did that too. Jason did that too.
Yep.
Don't get me wrong. But Tommy is showcased way more than Jason was, like, as the leader.
Yeah.
Like, it's almost not shoving it down people's throats, but just with the fact that there is no Tommy and Jason anymore, Tommy
and everyone else.
And everyone else. Although I will say, in the last few episodes, Billy stepped up to be a leader.
Billy and Kim were great de facto leaders when they needed to be.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. But Rocky, Adam, and Aisha were just part of the greater whole, and in some way, great fighters, especially Johnny Young Bosch, his movement was so smooth. I loved watching him fight out of costume. But they were just kind of part of the greater whole instead of you can make a distinction on them. And again, like with season one, we didn't watch every single episode.
Right.
So I could be wrong in some aspects, but it just seemed like they took a back seat to Tommy in a way.
Yeah.
Not like super glaring, but like you could tell they weren't as prominent as the other three were made.
Yeah.
But they're still good characters. Again, I don't have any ill will
towards them. Of course not.
I love
them. Yeah, they're great.
And Aisha. Also some production stuff. Now, there was a clear difference between the first half of season one and the last half of season two, right after the power transfer.
Mm-hmm.
Things started feeling different. And like we had mentioned earlier, there were a lot more limitations with them using the Zhu Ranger costumes and having to implement Gosei Sentai footage. And it really shows in a lot of spots.
Yeah.
There was a lot of disjointed episodes.
Yeah.
Also the fact that they were limited on what footage they could use. Some argue they're limited on footage. Some argue they're limited on creativity or ideas.
Yep.
There was a lot more multi-part episodes. But the thing
was,
they were just multi-part episodes. They didn't strengthen anybody in any way.
Yeah.
It was just the Rangers having to deal with a bigger threat that couldn't be resolved in, I guess, a 30-minute episode.
It literally is like you said. It didn't feel like the stakes were higher. Like this was an important event. It was just literally a two-part episode.
For the most part, they weren't pivot points.
Yeah.
Like the first
like
season.
The first
had
season. Yeah.
Because a lot of there's a glass half full, glass half empty mentality. Like there's a lot of things. The more critical fans will say it's because the writers were running out of ideas. So when you get to multi-part episodes, especially a multi-parter called Rangers Back in Time, there's a lot of filler.
They do a few episodes where they go back in time.
Yeah,
in
like
this season,
they're turned back into kids, which those aren't great episodes.
No,
because it's just the kid. I mean, the acting isn't good. We already established this last week. It's better in some spots than most. The kid actors are not good at all.
Kid actors are never good on this show.
No, so that was hard to watch. And then also, it's all these attempts for Zed to go back in time to demolish the Rangers and ensure they never happened. So this first attempt was to make them kids again.
Yeah.
And it just, nothing happened. Like, they didn't learn anything when they were kids that helped them later on in the series.
Yeah.
In season three, they do that again, where the kids for multiple episodes get turned in, or where the Rangers get turned into kids. But you know, like you said, they have multiple time travel episodes. The episode where they find that where Rocky, Kim, and Tommy find themselves in a storybook.
Yeah,
like nothing. It doesn't add anything. What it is you're running out of footage that you can use,
mm-hmm.
so you have to rely on those scenarios.
Those scenarios where you can film stuff that's quote-unquote original to the show. And then also, they were filming the movie at this point, too.
Yeah.
So a lot was filmed in Australia as well. But there's just instances where multi-part episodes are made multi-part because there's just not a lot they can do to, like, work around whatever Die Ranger did, to work around other limitations they had.
Yeah.
And it just seemed like they got lazy. But it's a lot of the time fans in retrospect are finding this.
Yeah.
Again, as a kid, you're just watching weekly or daily, weekly, whatever episodes of the Power Rangers.
Yeah.
You're still seeing the Power Rangers.
Exactly. So we're reaching the end here.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of want to do like what we did last week. We've touched on several of the notable arcs, which don't compare to the first season in terms of importance and weight and stuff like that. But I also want to touch on some notable monsters.
Yeah.
So just some notable monsters from season two. We've got an iguana salamander monster called Salaguana from Putty on the Brain. He was also in the wedding episode. There's Turban Shell, which is a snail mollusk monster who was in Green No More. That's the shell that Tommy jumped into with that laser gun.
Yeah.
Scatterbrain, who's a kaleidoscope monster from When Is a Ranger Not a Ranger. Got Bukala, who's from the Great Bukala Escape, who's like an alien who strongly resembles a Japanese kabuki dancer.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So Photomare, who was in Rangers Back in Time.
Yeah.
Is that camera monster. Turkey Jerk, who's in Storybook Rangers Part 2.
Yeah.
That was sort of the subplot. He was in that subplot that Yellow, Blue, and Black were trying to take him out. He was the robotic turkey monster. There's Beamcaster, who is a radio microphone themed monster. It's literally a microphone wearing a Lord Raiden hat. Who was in Zed Waves. The Wizard of Deception.
Yeah.
Who's in The Return of the Green Ranger. Looked like a Goosebumps monster. Mm-hmm. Because this was an American creation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, a lot of the monsters I'm naming were in Japanese footage. Mm-hmm. This one is an American creation, so it looks a lot like Goosebumps.
Mm-hmm.
It was like a fiery lizard masked monster who is still pretty creepy looking.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Primator, who is like a white baboon gorilla monster from the Wannabe Ranger.
Mm-hmm.
He also is like a shapeshifter.
Oh yeah.
Pachinko Head, who is a pachinko monster.
Oh yeah, that was the first like Rocky.
Yeah, Rocky
specific
just
episode.
Wants to have fun.
Mm-hmm.
And Pachinko, for those of you who don't know, it's like a mechanical Japanese game. It's an arcade game, but it's much more frequently used for gambling.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of puts a whole different spin.
So Rocky's a gambling
Rocky
problem.
Rocky just wants to have fun.
Mm-hmm.
They give him an intervention in the next episode. But those are some of the notable monsters I had.
So more and more as the season went on, of course, you know, Zed has a lot of menace to him. If anything, just physically. And essentially, he was made to be more of a fool. Because they wanted to soften his character.
His parents' groups thought he was too scary.
Yeah, essentially put him at the same level of hamminess as Rita. Yeah. So that was part of it, was like match him up with Rita. Like he's now fawning over her and in love with her and whatever. And parents' group, thought he was too scary. So it also, the last half of season two doesn't have the bite that the first does.
Yeah.
Because Zed, it looks menacing, but he's just as big a fool as...
Yep.
You know, Rita and her minions were in season one.
Yeah, exactly. You mentioned Rita comes back.
Mm-hmm.
And in that episode, Zed has to do like a recharge or whatever.
Yeah, like a 100-year recharge.
And that's when the Power Rangers go to Australia.
Mm-hmm.
And like Rita gives him a love potion. And
yeah.
Really, the only story arcs that matter in terms of, like you said, like pivot points, like we mentioned, that add any sort of menace and weight and actually mean something, are the mutiny. So that opening one, introduction of Lord Zed, Green No More is the end of the Green Ranger, and White Light.
Mm-hmm.
So the introduction of the White Ranger. And then just for power transfer is an important one as well. We mentioned that one.
Yeah.
And then Back in Time where they're kids. Again, it's not super important. It's just a multi-part.
Mm-hmm.
Any of the multi-part episodes I wrote down as quote-unquote notable arcs, even if they don't really advance anything.
No.
The wedding, like we just mentioned, Return of the Green Ranger.
That one is
cool because you'd see the Green Ranger again. They, yeah, the other Rangers get transported back to the 1800s.
Yeah.
Because of reasons. I guess, I can't remember.
It's to get him out of the way.
To get him out of the way because essentially Zed uses the Wizard of Deception
mm-hmm.
to create the Green Ranger again, and they want to take all the power from the White Ranger.
Mm-hmm.
Which they don't take all the power from the yeah. White. Essentially, they're just trying to take the White Ranger out of the picture.
Mm-hmm.
So in order to not be distracted by the other Rangers, they send them 200 years back in the past. It was useless and stupid.
Mm-hmm.
Except White Ranger versus Green Ranger, I remember
that
was
cool.
As a kid, because you didn't get to see it. When we started watching, we knew of the Green Ranger.
Yeah.
We knew how cool he was. We had the flip head, but we didn't see much of him.
Yeah.
So when he came back to fight the White mm-hmm. Ranger, I remember thinking that was really awesome.
Oh, yeah.
Plus, the Wizard of Deception creates these rat monsters.
Yeah.
And they're not even cool designs. It's literally dudes in rat costumes.
Mm-hmm.
And the final battle, at least up to that point, the Green Ranger gets to have is against dude in rat suits.
Yeah.
And he's like, my final battle is the Green Ranger. And I'm like, oh, no. This is stupid. And weren't they supposed to...
I think they were supposed to be kind of the next level minion.
Yeah.
Like, minions that took on the Rangers. Like, the putties weren't going to be in the movie. It was going to be rat costumes, but they saw mm-hmm. how hokey it looked. So they have the Ivanoos.
Yeah.
Monsters, which are creepy.
Far superior.
Mm-hmm.
Storybook Rangers, like we mentioned, they get transported into a storybook. And mm-hmm. then Wild West Rangers. Kimberly gets transported to the Wild West. Zed wants to destroy Angel Grove back then before the Rangers can even exist.
Mm-hmm.
But the Rangers are in the Wild West,
mm-hmm.
but it's like their ancestors.
Yeah.
And they become Rangers because Kim goes to get the power coins. Or no, Zordon sends her the power coins, and then they become Rangers.
No, Zordon is in the Wild West.
Like so admittedly, I didn't watch this episode.
Well, the thing is, I don't remember if Zordon is on another planet or he's just on. I think he's on the outskirts of it because Zordon and Alpha are on Earth, so I think they're just on the outskirts of Angel Grove.
Either way, the command mm-hmm. center is in Angel Grove again. They're. Season 2 has so many plot holes.
Yeah.
But, again, for kids, and a lot of kids aren't going to notice that, but she finds Zordon and Alpha in the 1800s.
Okay.
And gets the power coins because she gives the power coins to the ancestors of Rocky, Adam, Aisha, and Billy.
Yeah.
And they're supposedly Zordon says she's giving the power coins to who would become
Stopper
to Earth's first, the first Earth Power Rangers.
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't know. It just was weird.
Whatever.
It's plot convenience.
Yep.
But it's cool. Kim was the leader in that one.
Yeah. That's cool.
So that was cool. And then season 2 ends with a Billy centric episode.
Yeah.
Bad Boy Billy.
Yeah, exactly.
But that was season 2.
A lot happened.
A lot
behind
the
scenes.
I know a lot drama. We may have been rambling a lot. Not as much reliance on Sentai footage.
Yeah.
At least as key moments.
Yeah.
So you can tell there's a lot more of mishmashy things in season 2.
A lot of growing pains into its new identity.
Tonally wise, it starts off really strong and mature, more mature than season 1. Then it becomes Monster of the Week. Even with the multi-parters, they're no more significant than the Monster of the Week episodes.
Yeah.
Like the self-contained stuff. And I mean, but it still was Power Rangers. It still was unbelievably popular.
Of course.
You got with the last episode of season 2 aired on May 20th. The movie would come out just mere months mm-hmm. after that. Then after, a couple months after the movie, season 3 would start
mm-hmm.
and start incorporating what the movie introduced.
Yep.
And we'll talk more about that next week.
Yep.
Thank you all for listening. Hopefully you were more engaged in this episode than I was in the remainder of season 2.
Yeah.
I found myself looking at my phone a lot more. I have the DVDs and I can fast forward
mm-hmm.
and it gives you the different fast forward speeds. So just going back and forth between fast forwarding.
Yeah.
Again, I really like Adam, Rocky, and Aisha.
Yeah.
They do play an important role. They have really cool moments, but it just, it, essentially wasn't the same.
No.
Wasn't the same show after Rocky Adam and I, or after Jason, Zach, and Trini left, even though the White Ranger's badass.
Oh, of course.
Billy's still great. Kim's still great. And Rocky Adam and Aisha are great. That team itself interacts really well together. Bulk and Skull, still, you know, the goofballs that they are. So many good things going for it, but as an adult revisiting it, it's just not the same.
Nope.
But hopefully this was still consistent with the quality of last week. We really liked last week. Thank you all for listening to that. Thank you for listening to this. We will re-release our Mighty Morphin Power Rangers the movie episode.
Yeah.
That way you can kind of like, again, have the bridge from season 2 to season 3 right there. Revisit that, and hopefully you all enjoy. We'll rehash some stuff in that that we talked about here in season 1. But we're halfway through Mighty Morphin May.
Yeah.
That's not a long time, but we're still halfway through. Thank you all for listening. And like the Rangers would want us to tell you,
be good to yourselves, be good to each other, because why would you want to be rude when you can be rad? See you next time. Go, go.